presenting Hawk Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower back to CX-4. Wind southeast. Ceiling 1200 fans. All clear.
Okay. This is Hawk Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hawk Harrigan.
Say, gang, development of all types of new post-war planes is rushing ahead at aircraft plants throughout the country. Aviation men are constantly on the lookout for new planes and improvements on the old ones. Not all the planes being built or planned at the present, however, will go into immediate military or commercial use. In fact, many of them are strictly experimental. And not all the new ships are giant airliners, either. The one we're talking about today is the exact opposite of that. It's a helicopter nicknamed Little Henry. The McDonnell Aircraft Company of St. Louis is the builder of this new helicopter, which is powered by ramjet engines mounted on the tips of rotor blades. The name Little Henry came about because the helicopter weighs only 310 pounds. Actually, it's a little more than a frame with a seat and rotor attachments. Tiny 10-pound jet engines are mounted right at the tip of the rotor attachments. The McDonnell Company has been testing the helicopter for the past 6 months. So far, the results have been very encouraging. The tiny helicopter has lifted 300 pounds and attained a forward speed of 50 miles an hour. With a conventional flight helicopter, only 15% of the ship's empty weight can be lifted, but this new ship lifts almost 100% of its own weight. The secret of the amazing performance lies in the great power developed by the two jet engines. In the test plane, the stovepipe ramjets are so light they can be attached directly to the rotor blades. Well, in just a few minutes, gang, I'll be back with more information, so don't forget to listen. And now for our story. Flying to the small Ohio town of Flemington, Pop, Tank, and John Temple, the FBI agent, pursued their investigation of the sudden, puzzling, discordant tones of the bells from the carillon of Peronitz. Questioning the pastor of the local church, they learned that the bell in the steeple had lost its tone 3 days after its installation, and for no apparent reason, just like the six other bells from the same carillon. As we continue now, the boys and Temple, with the pastor's permission, have climbed up inside the steeple of the old country church and are examining the bell very carefully.
For Pete's sake, Hop, be careful. Remember what happened to you in Lakeview.
Oh, don't worry. See anything wrong, Hop?
Not on this side.
You? It's in perfect condition as far as I'm concerned.
Well, how about the inside? That's where we saw that little hole in the Lakeville bell.
I'm going to check now.
Hop, will you watch yourself?
I'm all right.
No, I'm holding on.
Here.
Are you sure?
Can't see anything. Pull me back.
All right.
Thanks.
Looks like we got another crusade.
Mr. Temple?
That's the pastor.
Mr. Temple?
Yes, sir?
A messenger boy just brought a telegram for you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, maybe the report on the Lakeville bell.
Or the others. I'll be right down, pastor.
Very well.
Wait for me, boys. We may have some further checking to do here.
Okay, John. Oh, gosh, the more I think about this mess, the groggier I get. Just don't make no sense. Bells don't suddenly lose their clear tone for nothing thing.
Maybe they do.
Maybe it was the cold weather. One of the bells went sour down in Alabama. It was cold there. Maybe shipping them across the ocean from Czechoslovakia did something to them.
Yeah, only an expert could tell that. Here comes John.
Looks like he's got something.
Any news, John?
No, I'll say. It's a report I was expecting from the man I sent to examine the other bells.
What's he say?
Wait. I want to check this bell again. Hop, will you look inside, up under the comb near the tongue?
Well, what shall I look for?
A small circle, about the size of a nickel.
What's the idea?
I'll explain in a minute. Go on, Hop.
Sure thing. Hang on to me, Tank.
Yeah, what?
Up at the top, near the tongue, you said?
Yes. About the same place you saw the hole in the Lakeville bell.
Right.
Well?
No, I don't see a thing.
Run your hand over the inner surface.
Feels smooth. Wait a minute.
Yes?
Something's sticking out here. It's round, all right.
Good.
If I can only get a little closer, I may be able to see it.
Easy, huh?
Wait, looks like a plug.
Okay, come on back.
Pull, Tank.
Yeah. Will you please tell me what this is all about?
Yes. Yeah. Now we know why the bells have suddenly become discordant.
You mean that plug has something to do with it?
Right.
Come on, give up.
A metal plug was found in each of the first five valves. Someone apparently drilled a hole through the casing and then inserted the plug.
Drilled a hole through this stuff?
You yourself said it could be done with a diamond drill, Hank. But why, John?
That's not in the report.
Hey, wait a minute. There wasn't no plug in the Lakeville bell.
I know. It's got me stumped.
Someone drills a hole in the bell and fills the hole with a metal plug. That's fantastic.
Oh, that guy's nuts.
Nuts or diabolically sane. I wonder which.
Fingering the crumpled telegram and staring at the church bell, the FBI agent poses a puzzling question. Then, turning, leads the way down through the steeple back into the church, where they are met by Pastor Howard.
Well, Mr. Temple, do you know what has happened to our bell?
Yes, sir, it's just what we suspected. Someone's been working on it.
Working on it?
Some joker got up there and drilled a hole in it.
Well, that's incredible. Who'd do such a thing and why?
That's exactly what we've been asking ourselves.
Are you sure, Mr. Temple? Couldn't it have been an accident?
I'm afraid not.
I don't understand it, that someone would commit such a vandalous act in a church.
Pastor Howard.
Yes, Mr. Harrigan.
You said you were away from the church yesterday afternoon.
Yes?
Exactly how long?
Well, I visited Mrs. Gaffney at 2:00. Then I went to the county hospital. I must have been there for at least 2 hours.
Then you were gone from about 2 to 4?
Well, let's say 2 until 5. I know I was almost late for services.
I see.
You believe the bell was tampered with during that time?
Seems logical.
Yeah, that steeple's wide open. Whoever did it would have had to go through the church. You would have seen him if he was here.
I still find it very hard to believe.
Well, I think we'd better get along now. Thank you very much, Pastor Howard. I hope we haven't bothered you too much.
No, not at all. I don't believe I've been much help, though.
On the contrary, you have.
Goodbye, then, and good luck, gentlemen.
Goodbye, sir.
Bye. Okay. Let's go, boys.
Oh, if you wait in front of the church, I'll telephone for a taxi. It'll be along in a few moments.
Thank you, Pastor.
Go ahead, John.
Thank you.
Well, what now?
Back to the airport. I'm afraid we've learned all there is to know in Flemington.
Standing on the snow-covered walk, Hop, Tank, and John Temple wait for their taxi in silence, each puzzling over the strange mystery in which they've become involved. 15 minutes later, they arrive at the small local airport, and as Tank warms up the Beechcraft, Hop checks out with the field manager.
How weather conditions, Charles?
Oh, not bad. High overcast, steady west wind at 10,000 feet.
Any reporters now?
None in the last hour.
Right. Here you are.
Up Harrigan, Beechcraft, bound for Lakeville. Okay, Mr. Harrigan, thanks.
Oh,
yes, sir.
I was just thinking.
We figured out that whoever's playing around with those cells must be using the plane. Think he might have landed here yesterday?
Could be if they were flying a private jet.
Will you check it?
Sure. I beg your pardon.
Yes?
May I check your register, please?
Well, this is official.
Oh, FBI.
Of course.
Just give me yesterday's sheet, please.
Yes, sir.
Here you are.
Check the arrivals and departures before 5.
There's quite a lot of traffic at the field.
Mostly routine student flights, sir, you see?
Ah, oh, yes. Flemington local.
Hey, what's this one?
Huh?
Valanca. Arrived 11:32 a.m., departed 4:05 p.m.
Well, transient pilot with mechanic, sir.
I am Carlos Mendez. Foreign registration, Argentina.
Yeah, he developed engine trouble, came down for repairs.
Ah, I see.
I guess we're barking at the wrong tree.
Okay, thanks.
Sure, quite all right.
Let's go, John. Ship must be warmed up by now.
Right.
You want to go right back to Lakeville?
What's on your mind?
Just wondering whether it wouldn't be a good idea to pay that last bell in Nebraska a quick visit. The one that's still undamaged.
I've already sent a man out.
I'd feel better if we went ourselves.
That's good enough for me. What are we waiting for?
Driving quickly out of the airport office, Hop and Temple rush over to the waiting Beechcraft, and after a quick conference with Tank, climb in and take off. What will they find in Nebraska?
You'll be amazed, gang, so stand by.
Did you know, gang, that out at the Boeing aircraft plant in Seattle, they've dusted off a lot of sewing machines that have been in storage for a number of years and have put them to work again? Before all metal planes came into common use some years ago, the sewing machine was one of the principal manufacturing tools of the aircraft industry. With metal planes taking over the airlanes, sewing machines went into retirement. But now they're back again, and are taking their place as an important cog in producing high-speed commercial transports. I bet you'd like to know how a sewing machine fits into the manufacturing end of a plane. Well, in the Boeing plant, they're used on the new Stratocruiser, which will be flying all over the country next year for many of the major airlines. And there's an almost endless number of items that need to be sewed in the Stratocruiser. Passenger chairs on the Stratocruisers must be covered with fabric, and curtains, too, must be sewed. Another job for the sewing department is cutting and stitching the so-called kapok blankets, which form the soundproofing of the big planes. There's an almost endless chain of smaller items that pass through the shop. They range from straps and cargo nets to gaskets and seals made from rubber, cork, and felt. By the way, there are some real old-timers working in the Boeing department. The oldest seamstress in the place is Mrs. Ada Boyer, who probably knows more about planes and aviation than most men. For she began her career at Boeing way back in 1921, when she sewed fabric on wings of triplane bombers. Well, she's sticking to her job, helping to make American planes the best in the world. And you know, fellas and girls, this country needs pilots and technicians to man and service those planes. Plan now to make your career in aviation. And always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. Flying west to Nebraska, instead of south to Lakeville, Hop, Tank, and John Temple are en route to Bay City and the last bell from the Carillon of Piranhas, the only bell thus far undamaged. Roaring through the night sky, Hop crowds all the speed he can get out of the Beechcraft. Tank is complaining, too.
Boy, I was all set for a big feed at Aunt Agatha's tonight. Now what do I get? Nothing but sandwiches and coffee.
Tank, this is important.
How do you expect to find anything in a place where nothing's happened?
We haven't been too successful where something has happened, have we?
Maybe tonight we'll be Johnny on the spot. Where do they hang the Bay City bell, John?
They're in the City Hall. Been there almost a week now.
Tone all right?
Mm-hmm, perfect.
Let's hope it stays that way. Got a man already there?
Yes, and I wired Gordon to inspect it. Now, when do you think we'll get in, Hop?
Oh, another couple of hours. Before midnight, in any case.
What time is it?
5:12. We didn't make some spare time. What happened to your Gordon guy? I thought he was going to meet us at the field.
No, I told him to wait for us at City Hall.
Hey, you cleared this with the police, didn't you? Maybe they won't like us snooping around.
The police will cooperate. Don't worry, Dan.
Hey, cab's slowing down.
That must be the City Hall, the building on the right there. Oh, here you are, driver.
Thanks.
I don't see Gordon around anywhere.
He may be waiting inside.
Come on.
Gloomy looking place, ain't it?
Didn't see nobody in the street.
That's late, Tank. This isn't New York, remember?
Here's the door.
Hey, listen.
Great Scott, the bell. It's off key. Good Lord, come on.
As the bell tolls the hour of midnight, echoing over the sleeping city with a now all too familiar unearthly tone, Hop, Tank, and John Temple rush into the City Hall and up the stairs to the bell tower. At its base, their fears are realized.
Up on Johnny's. Look, it's Gordon. He's there.
So now, murder has been added to the strange mystery of the Carillon of Piranhas. Gang, there's action and lots of suspense ahead, so don't miss our next episode. Tune in and fly with Pops Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. Well on, Pops. We'll be seeing you same time, same neutral station. Pops Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine.